Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in, boys and girls, mostly boys. Welcome in. We are here with the KE Report. I'm going to spend the first half of this particular program chatting with Jim McKinney about what's going on in the executive office. I have to tell you, I have an opinion, and I'm just going to throw it out there. This is not based on fact. This is based strictly on my opinion. After what happened this week with some of the comments that some of the world leaders have made about Biden, I simply do not understand why the Democrats propped him up, and he's now the president of the United States. It's one joke after another. Look what happened. Look what Putin said. Biden actually came out and said something. He said, Putin is a killer. And I have to tell you one thing, in my opinion, I'm really not sure what the point of that statement was. I simply don't get it. And then Vladimir Putin came around and he said, why don't we have a chat, an unscripted chat that's totally live? And of course, the executive office turned him down. The first thing I'm going to ask Jim at this point, because there's not a hell of a lot going on right now politically other than world leaders, I have some questions about why the theoretically most powerful man in the world, the president of the United States, is actually Joe Biden at this point. I'm going to get Jim's opinion first, and then I'm going to give you my opinion. Jimmy, what do you think?
I think that the comment that Biden made with ABC News in the interview, indicating that Vladimir Putin was a killer, was a diplomatic blunder. They came into office saying that they were going to be more diplomatic, but they're being forced in them. They're forcing themselves, the Biden administration, the Biden regime, is forcing itself into really having it, you know, making some major mistakes early on. We've got the Russia issue, and of course, Vladimir Putin did call him out. It's kind of embarrassing to have to back off on a comment like that.
Yep.
But also today in Anchorage, and you know, yesterday, the Secretary of State Blinken and the National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan are meeting with the Chinese Foreign Minister and the Chinese Senior Policy Advisor, and that turned into a diplomatic debacle as they chewed each other out in the initial opening of the conference. And it's actually the Chinese were being very aggressive and pushed back. That was not a very positive moment for U.S. diplomacy, and it's probably putting them into a difficult situation, the Biden administration into a difficult position.
Well, the Biden administration really appears to be almost Biden in name only. I would like to get the opinion of some of my friends who are big-time Biden supporters, because I simply don't understand it. I have to tell you, I have felt now, Jim, ever since the election, I have felt just after the election, let's say ever since the results came in, there has to be another organization behind what's going on. I think that people realized they could not control Trump, and I think that the fact that they can't control Trump is the reason that he's no longer the president. I have to believe that China has something to do with that. I really don't know what, but there is somebody behind this, some organization behind this, Jim, that has made this happen. That was not, in my opinion, a free election. If another Democrat had been elected as president of the United States, I would not make that allegation. But Joe Biden at this point in time is absolutely, totally not the man for the job. Why don't you summarize that and give us some reasons why you agree or disagree?
No, I agree. There are people that stepped in. I don't know if it's a specific individual or a small group, but I will say that big tech, Google, Twitter, Facebook, they very much sided against Donald Trump. They silenced voices. They hid different information on Hunter Biden with the Chinese relationship, and of course that directly related to Joe Biden. You have major media corporations, ABC, CBS, NBC, Washington Post, New York Times, all of them actually actively attacking President Trump and very, very mild and soft and almost protective of Joe Biden, who's really not there yet. And then you've got a lot of big corporate money behind it that really I think at China as a growing market and in America as a waning market. And so financially, it does not benefit them with Trump's America First policy. And I think they got together along with ideologues and progressives. And there's a level of Marxist support behind this, you know, the shock troops in Antifa and Black Lives Matter that have actually created such havoc and created fear. And then you've got the COVID situation, which directly relates back to the Chinese Communist Party and how they mismanaged or possibly even utilized this crisis as an opportunity. So those factors all come together to install somebody that's really not competent, and the American public would have never, and the American media would have never allowed to happen in the past. But in fact, what we see now, I mean, the media would have destroyed a Joe Biden 15 years ago. He would have never made it past the primary. Right. But they facilitated this. They facilitated his rise, and now they're trying to protect him. And you just can't protect that level of inability. And unfortunately, I really look at his wife and say, you know, Dr. Jill Biden, why would you allow your husband to be put in a precarious situation like this over a period of time? It's not healthy for America. It's certainly not healthy for him, but it's actually potentially devastating to the future of our world and our nation if he continues down this road.
Well, let's go back a few years, Jimmy. Let's go back to when Hillary Clinton lost the election in 16. Now, I have to tell you, I'm not a Clinton supporter, but it is absolutely amazing that Donald Trump won that election. I almost have to say, I mean, I know you wouldn't like to say because he was the better candidate, and I'm not disagreeing with that, but I'm saying it was a very, very big surprise to the American electorate when Hillary lost that election. I can't
There's no
believe,
doubt.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
There's no doubt. You're right.
Yeah, and that was a very interesting event. And then 4 years later, after the country has done better and better and better, both on the international level, on virtually every level, I was looking at some of the economic indicators over the past 4 years when Trump was in office. We had a pretty good economy. Things were going pretty well. And then out of the blue, boy, you talk about an absolute political anomaly. We get COVID. This COVID thing has actually, me being in the heart of it with my particular domestic situation, which all listeners are aware of, I don't get it. Why did that happen? Why was COVID not just another regular flu epidemic? Somebody had to be behind that, Jim. There are too many things going on right now that are very, very strange. We've only got about a minute left here. I'd like some opinions from you guys. CFS, of course, I'd like to know what you think. Jerry, I'd like to know what you think. Ebelon, Irish Tony, et cetera, et cetera. So what is behind this? It is more than just normal current events, in my opinion. Got about 30 seconds here, Jimmy. What do you think? Just an introduction. I want to get back on this in the next segment.
So I think those groups that we talked about, but I think more importantly, there's an effort to degrade America. And I think it's trying to undermine confidence in our history, confidence in our, and divide us. And I think that's what this is, what we're seeing right now is that successful effort. And we can talk more about it after the break.
I want to talk about that here in about 20 seconds, but I want to wrap this up and say one thing, and that is American history is absolutely being thrown in the toilet. And I just want to remind people that all of the mistakes that were made in America, slavery, et cetera, all of those mistakes have been taken care of. The slate has been wiped clean. And there are many, many people are saying that's not true. Stick around. I'm going to be right back.
You're
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Time for the second segment of the KE Report. You brought up something, Jimmy, in the last segment that I think is very important, and that is that American history is totally being degraded right now. American people are insisting that Confederate military personnel statues are being torn down. It's gotten to the point even where statues of George Washington and other American leaders are being torn down. This is not politics as usual, Jim. There is somebody behind this, and we will know sooner or later who that somebody is. I think it's a very powerful, very well-run organization, and I think it's probably well-run by somebody who has a huge guilty conscience about a portion of American history called slavery, and they want to, for lack of better terms, wipe that off the slate. You cannot wipe an event like that off the slate. All you can do is try to reverse the trend, and the trend finally was reversed, I would have to say, in the 60s. Any comment on that, Jim?
So my view is that, again, that there is a concerted effort to undermine confidence in American history, in American institutions, to undermine faith in each other, to divide and separate us. A very, you know, let's define equity rather than equality. Let's look at each other by our race and not by our character. You know, exactly what we would like to see, what we thought we were getting to. And, you know, I think there's not a specific person. You know, I've said it before, and I'll just share it again. Then my view, the 95-5 rule, 90% of the people want to live their lives. 5% get out in front, they're leaders, and they want to do better for others. The other 5% are leaders, and they want to do better for themselves. And it's a fight for power between the two 5% groups, you know. And I think the 5% right now that has the media message that is trying to dominate with power is a combination of the Democratic Party, of the former Obama administration officials that really don't believe in America, that don't trust America, that think that there's historically a bad place. And I think it's a warped view of the world. There's truth. You know, we've had mistakes. We've made mistakes. Americans have. But ultimately, what has been the shining light in the world has been the U.S. Constitution and what we strive for to be better with and how we've changed to improve our lives. And now, for the first time in my lifetime, we're going backwards. And I do think there are a lot of people in that 5% that want power, that are willing to use that as a political tool. And a lot of people out there are following it right now. And they're following it blindly because they're being directed by the media. They're being directed by their political leaders. They're being directed by, you know, hate, and they're also being directed by financial benefit and money. And so you've got the George Soros's, you've got the, you know, the different organizations that are out there trying to achieve similar goals, and they're all unifying to achieve something that's very negative, I think, for the nation.
You know, Jimmy, we're seeing political and social events and business events occurring right now just in the Pacific Northwest that are absolutely terrifying. The company that was the largest company, the largest employer in the Pacific Northwest, is now having serious trouble, and that's the Boeing Airplane Company. Microsoft, Amazon, etc. are doing better and better and better. I think that's the reason that we're having the events that we're having right now, because if we were in a nationalistic frame of mind, I would have to say that this probably would not be going on. You probably wouldn't have unemployment in Seattle due to the Boeing layoffs, et cetera, et cetera. The Amazon employees are a very specialized group of people, and of course they're doing very well. They are taking advantage of a situation which could be a really good situation, but the fact of the matter is the average intelligence of an Amazon worker or a Microsoft worker is head and shoulders above the average intelligence of, let's say, a construction guy or somebody who in the factory. Those are the people right now that are hurting the most, and I feel sorry for them almost as much as I feel sorry for myself and yourself, Jimmy. I don't know where we're going to go from this, because absolutely nothing is happening other than the President of the United States is backing himself into a corner and making himself look like an absolute fool. Who would want to see that happen, Jim?
Yeah, it's terrible to watch. I do not completely agree with you on the intelligence level of different employees. You know, my son is an AI. He's a PhD Caltech theoretical physicist that works for Amazon. He's a smart guy.
Yeah, but I
worked for a contractor as a young man, as a carpenter, who had a fourth grade education that made, you know, over $1 million in the 60s before he was 35 years old.
Yeah.
He was a pretty smart guy too, but he didn't have education typically. What we're seeing is this people, elitists, that are dividing people and not recognizing that everyone does have a voice, and they're separating them. And oh, right, they are crushing small business. They're crushing the small guy, the people that need the help the most. That's what's so disturbing. Amazon is destroying small businesses. They're destroying brick and mortar, local small businesses, small business owners.
You bet.
And that's very devastating for our future and our economy, because in fact, he's going to focus on a bit much broader global market and the way he can continue to run his operations. And that is not in the benefit of our hometown.
Jim, let me ask you a question. When you talk about the guilt level in this country right now, there's a tremendous amount of guilt by in some people's philosophy towards African Americans, et cetera, et cetera. And I know that's a situation where a fair amount of historical guilt needs to occur. But the fact of the matter is, does it need to occur to the extent that it's at today?
I don't believe it needs to be guilt. I believe it needs to be historically reviewed. And I learned it in school, and I certainly understood the horror of slavery, but I also understood the sacrifices of literally hundreds of thousands of Americans that fought to end it, and the challenge that it took economically on the country to push through those agendas, and how we worked through these processes in the 60s to give civil rights. That's the history you need to see, the positive end of it. And I don't believe in the guilt. I didn't, you know, I wasn't there. I didn't do that. No one in my generation did the same things. They didn't hold slaves. That was, you know, 5-6 generations ago. That's not guilt. That's understanding history. And if you erase the history and reshape it into some lie, then you're destroying truth. And that's unfortunately what we're seeing today with these objectives, destroying truth and not accepting history for what it was and trying to change it and erase it. And that's a mistake.
No question about that. That is a mistake. We have a big mistake going on in the country right now. I would like to get some input from listeners as to why this is happening and who do you think is behind it.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the second half of the KE Report. I have a very interesting woman on the line right now. Her name is Michelle Bailey. She's a Forbes Books author. The book is called The Currency of Gratitude. What we're going to talk about right now is why your business should practice gratitude, even in the midst of a crisis like we're in right now. And this COVID thing is one of the most serious experiences I've ever had in my life. Michelle, what do you mean when you talk about the currency of gratitude? Exactly what is that?
The currency of gratitude, Al, is about taking small gestures that impact business to create measurable results.
Okay.
Like money, currency has value. It's an exchange, and it's usually for the positive. That's why I titled my book, Currency of Gratitude.
you know, I can understand that. Now, it's very obvious to me that gratitude is linked to business growth, because I think the demand for a person's skill, or the demand, and that would be analogous with the demand for a person's product. If they like the people they're dealing with, if they feel comfortable with those people, they're going to buy from those people. They're going to utilize their services. Don't you agree?
Absolutely, Al. The way of getting the best business is through word of mouth, or what we call earned media.
You bet.
Because you understand, you're in business.
Yep.
You can get 5 times more growth in your business through word of mouth than any other form of advertising. And that, again, boils down to being grateful, gracious, kind, and empathetic to your clients and customers.
Yeah, you know, I've experienced that many, many times in my life. I ran my own consulting business for 40 years, but we're not here to talk about me. We're here to talk about you. But I actually am very intrigued with what you have to say because of the way that I ran my business. I treated everybody fairly. I was friendly, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't even use written contracts, if you want to know the truth. And I never, ever, ever got stuck. Let me ask you this. For somebody who owns their own shop, as they say, how do you know if you have a good company culture, Michelle?
For me, it's very easy, Al. I walk into many organizations. As you know, I own several companies. And I walk into other companies and I see their values, mission, vision, and purpose on the wall. But what I read on the wall is not often what I see with the people with whom I'm dealing with. So when you have a grateful culture, it oozes from people. You sense it. You sense the graciousness and the gratitude, and that they are living the business's brand on purpose. And you can often see when it's not. And Al, I have to tell you, I have seen more brands off culture than on culture. So gratitude kind of changes the wheel of all of that, because when people know that you really care for them as a business owner or a business leader, they will show up and be their best self and do their best work for you, because they understand that you value them.
You know, one of the most interesting experiences I ever had is I was playing golf with a client at a very, very exclusive club down in Dallas, Texas, and my client was embarrassingly rude to the staff down at that golf club. And it ruined my entire day. I actually ruined my entire week. I just thought, how can this guy treat people this way? You know, one of the notes that your publicist sent me that I think is really interesting. Many leaders think there's no need to show gratitude for a job their employees are paid to do. That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. That's why you really have to show the gratitude, because oftentimes your employees don't even want to come to work. If you want them to go the extra mile, they better know that you care, right?
Boy, Al, I love the fact that you brought that up without any prompting, because I will tell you what the stats are saying to us today, a year into this pandemic. 100% of employees are raising their hand and stating that they are burnt out. 80%.
Yep.
62% of individuals today currently are looking for a new job because they are unhappy and they are not feeling appreciated. And 33% of a person's salary goes into replacing them.
Yep.
So when you want to talk about return on investment, put your salary numbers in those stats and you will see how simple gestures of appreciation, kindness, and gratitude go on to make sticky people stick to you and to your business. And that's what we all need right now.
Yep.
As we start looking and moving forward.
I have absolutely no disagreement. You know, I've got a couple of daughters who are pretty successful in their own right, well-educated, very, very successful. And I'll tell you, one of them, I don't know if I should mention the names of the companies, but let me just say, I'll go ahead and take a shot. One of them is a bit of an executive with a company called Lululemon, and another one has a very high-level position in a company called Sur La Table. I guarantee you, Michelle, these two gals will work above and beyond because they have so much respect for the higher-ups in their companies.
Wow, Al. So you said it yourself. You see, those cultures in companies are known for appreciating people.
Yep.
And when you appreciate people, they will work for you 200%. They show up not from 9 to 5. They show up and they are present whenever they need to be present. This is all about appreciation, and what you give out comes back to you, and your daughters are examples of things that are coming back threefold.
They are very, very fortunate to be in the position that they're in. Now, I have a question for you, and this one is perhaps the basic question of this entire conversation. How did you get started in this deal, Michelle?
The gratitude deal started for me, Al, midway through my entrepreneurial journey, so about 12 years ago, when my firm was in the midst of a personal and professional crisis through business. My general manager at the time was arrested for embezzlement of company funds. And when he was arrested and I was left to pick up the pieces of my business, it was people who stepped in. It was vendors, it was suppliers, it was friends, it was peers. People from all walks of life stepped in to help me for 18 months until I could run my business again, clearly and with focus. So I realized a simple thank you wasn't enough.
No.
What I needed to do for these 100 people, give or take 10 people, is to let them know how they had impacted my life and changed me for the better. So I actually created 7 sentences, Al, that I wrote a note to each of these people, and basically the 7 sentences were, one word that describes you, you came into my life, you bring me joy by, you inspire me by, you contribute to my life, and I hope to add to our journey together, and I want to thank you for. And I wrote a note to each and every person and delivered it to them mostly face-to-face, and that extension of gratitude has forever changed not only me, but the relationships that I do have in my life.
Yep. Well, you sound like a very interesting woman. I mentioned to you at the onset of this conversation that we had off mic that I used to do a fair amount of public speaking in Toronto. I guarantee you I will be coming back to Toronto at some point in the relatively near future. And when I do, I'll buy you an Italian dinner because I'm going to get your book. The book is entitled, I have it right here, The Currency of Gratitude. She's the president and CEO of The Blazing Group, which is a brand and culture agency. Michelle, it's been a sincere pleasure. Thank you. Welcome in time for the second half of the KE Report. This is all finance, specifically all hard assets. I am talking with Dr. Stephen Lieb right now, and Stephen made an interesting offer to you folks out there when we were chatting off mic. He said, anytime any of your listeners have any questions, please send them in on the blog. I will make it a point to give them as detailed an answer as I possibly can. Let me stress one thing. This guy, Dr. Lieb, is, in my opinion, one of the foremost experts on gold. Second to Big Al. I used to know quite a bit about it. Dr. Lieb knows everything about it, and I have to say, any questions that you have, as intricate, as dynamic, what have you, as you want to get into, is fine. He says he is willing to take the time, maybe use them as a basis of some of the philosophy that he gives in his excellent newsletter. So we're going to start out right here. We're going to talk about an idea that I had when I was chatting with Jimmy this morning off mic. We're talking about economically what's going on in the United States. I have to say one thing, and that is the stock markets, the conventional markets, it would appear at this point in time, are kind of in trouble. And guess what gold is doing? Gold had an interesting little spike for a while. It's kind of going down right now, but it isn't going down into oblivion. Up until Biden got elected, it was not what I would call the strongest gold market in the world. But now there's a lot of optimism there. Dr. Lieb, why is there a bit more optimism now in the precious metals, specifically gold and silver? Why is there more optimism today than there was, let's say, 3 months ago? You're on, sir.
Okay, I think, Al, the big thing at this point has been not so much gold per se, but the whole commodity complex has really rallied in a way that we haven't seen since, I would say, the beginning of the century. We had a massive rally in commodities. But if you look at commodities and you look at general indices of commodities, whether they be food or whether they be industrials, you're up almost 40% from the bottom, which, you know, in a year's time, the bottom was about March of 2020. In a year's time, a 40% gain in commodity prices is an exceptional gain. And you usually see that in the midst of, major economic recoveries. And you are seeing a major economic recovery, but you're not there yet. I mean, really, the economies, in fact, Europe hasn't even started growing. The United States has probably started growing. But you're still getting sort of not great economic statistics, but it's basically coming from the developing world. And, you know, their need for commodities is so great that it's hard to overstate it. I mean, basically, Al, you're looking at a world right now where about 15%, and we're in that 15%, we're in the developed part of this planet. We have the essentials of life, et cetera, but 85% of that world, including China and India and most of the East, is undeveloped. I mean, China, which has become our bitter enemy, I mean, their income per capita is less than $10,000 a year. I mean, they're still developing. And their need for commodities is incredible, and it's picking up. And what's really putting this whole commodity binge on steroids right now is the fact that we, at the same time these countries are developing, we have to shift energy resources, our energy from fossil fuels, our carbon intense, whatever you feel about climate change, it doesn't matter because we've already bought hook, line, and sinker into the need to decarbonize things. And even if we weren't decarbonizing things, we'd still need to switch our energy sources from fossil fuels to things that are renewable, whether it be nuclear. And if we are going to use fossil fuels, we're going to have to use just natural gas. We've got to get rid of all the coal. We've got to really cut down on oil. And we have to use, sun, wind, again, nuclear. These are the things that are happening because it takes tremendous amounts of commodities, including fossil fuels, in order to switch to sunlight. In order to switch to, let's say, make an electric vehicle, you need tremendous amounts of copper. And in order to get that copper, you need the oil, the diesel, to run the machines right now. So, I mean, you're in a period of time where, there are going to be corrections, there are going to be dips, but basically commodities are headed, definitely much higher. And, to complete the picture, gold is in a very interesting situation right now because, in a sense, it's participating, but not to the extent that one would hope. Typically in the past, when we've had these kinds of commodity booms, gold has done noticeably better than other commodities. It's done okay. It has done okay this time, but you haven't seen anything yet when it comes to gold, because gold right now has really transitioned, in my opinion, from a commodity that will follow other commodities, because commodities tend to move together, to no longer a commodity. It's really now acting almost like a currency, in the sense that it's competing with the dollar. I mean, basically, the next major move in gold is when people sense that the dollar can no longer remain in its role as a reserve currency, and that instead we're going to need perhaps, in my opinion, a basket of currencies. This has been talked about before, which is backed by gold, and, you know, be kind of a floating gold standard. And then you'll see gold, I mean, go to the moon. I mean, I'm using just a cliche, but you haven't seen anything yet. But what's been holding gold back has been, people keep pointing to interest rates. Interest rates have nothing to do. I mean, they have virtually nothing to do with it. Interest rates are going up now simply because you have commodity inflation, a lot of it. When you have a 40% move in commodities, no matter how much they try and disguise it with the statistics, it's there, and it's inflation. When people are going to the grocery store and paying more for food and going to the gas station and paying more for gas, that's inflation. I don't care what the numbers show. And interest rates are way below inflation. So, I mean, this should be a very, very good environment for gold. But the reason it isn't yet is that it has sort of transformed itself. And it's a good thing, because it's no longer just following other commodities. It's taking its cue from the dollar. And that's what is really important to watch right now, is how the dollar continues to behave. My own thinking is that once Europe gets its act together, they've been trailing the U.S. and, you know, most of the rest of the world because they, you know, for problems because of their vaccine. I mean, they're, you know, 15 or so countries that are, you know, squabbling, et cetera. It's hard for them to get their act together. But once they start going, I think you'll see, you know, unfortunately, a lot more inflation in the U.S. than you see in Europe. And I think you'll see the dollar really take a dive. And at that point, gold is going to emerge. And emerge, it's just going to blossom in a way that's it's going to be hard to believe in when you see it. But you'll know it. You'll know it. And starting to see signs of it now. But why I'm emphasizing this and going on like a crazy man right now is I do not want anyone to be discouraged by what they're seeing in the gold market right now. Even though it's up, it may not be up as much as you would like to see it up. It is going to go. There is just it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And when it goes, it could be a very, very dramatic move. So,
Dr. Lieb, I have to stop you just for a second. We do have a clock that we have to adhere to. I'm going to run the second part of this discussion on Monday for sure. Ladies and gentlemen, stick around and wait for Monday to talk to the genius, Dr. Lieb.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.